Welcome back to the News and Views Radio Network. He is in the house, former U.S. Attorney two times over, Drew Wrigley, former Lieutenant Governor of the state of North Dakota. Drew Wrigley is here. Drew, good to have you back on News and Views.
Joel, thanks for having me, and hello to your listeners.
Did it shock you that the Eighth Circuit came out and said no death penalty for Alfonso Rodriguez?
Well, it wasn't the Eighth Circuit. The Eighth Circuit judge sitting by as a district court judge because he presided over the trial. In the wake of the procedural history across this thing, having been the lead trial lawyer at trial and then appealing it, the defense appealed the death verdict, which was 15 years ago this month on the 22nd. They appealed it to Judge Erickson at that time, and he reviewed the whole thing and did not give them a new trial. And then it went to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, where I prepared to help lead the team to prepare the briefs and get ready. And the Obama administration, in fact, in no small part, allowed me to stay on so that I could argue it personally at the Eighth Circuit. And I stayed on for a while, and I argued it in February after President Obama took office. Stayed on until September when the decision came down that it had been affirmed. Then it went on to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the Supreme Court, by a vote of 9-0, last I checked, there's not a lot of those these days, 9-0, they rejected even, they don't even need to hear it. So it comes back down. I leave office in 2009. 10 years later, I come back. This thing is still weaving its way through now because there's been a whole period of appeal, but it's been scrutinized completely. That first go-around is when they're focusing on the United States. What did the prosecutors do? What did the court do? What were the instructions? How did Drew Wrigley close in his closing arguments? Was that appropriate? On and on and on and on, all scrutinized all the way through, upheld every step of the way. So you asked the question, was I surprised when now it goes through after all this? And you've got a case where the defense lawyers were literally handpicked by the judge. Judge Erickson, because that's under the federal procedures. He handpicks them. You got a guy who'd been trying death penalty cases for 25 years. Richard Ney had never lost a federal death penalty verdict. And Bob Hoy, who everybody listening right now would probably agree, and I can say this after 18 years as a prosecutor, both here in North Dakota, and I was away for a few years in one of the largest prosecutor's offices in the country in Philly. And I can tell you that Bob Hoy is one of the, if not the finest defense lawyers I've ever seen. So that's who Alfonso Rodriguez had representing him. Handpicked by the judge, their whole investigation handpicked by the judge. He has to sign off on every expert, every test, everything that they do. He knew everything they were doing every step of the way. We didn't until now. And isn't it a surprise that after all this, now we learned, and you go through these quotes, and I'm sure they're not having a good day reading them, all throughout this opinion is full of quotes along the lines of, they didn't do enough to discover enough about mental health. They didn't do enough. It wasn't vigorous enough to prepare to cross-examine the medical examiner. I got news for all your listeners. I've seen the photographs of Drew Shedin's body when it was found. The jury didn't because they blocked us from getting those in front of the jury. I've seen all that. The injuries that were, some that were apparent, some were mysterious, some things that were going on, you needed some explanation. This was, and the court says this in their opinion too, this was not the crux of the case even, because it wasn't a mystery. Everyone agrees, homicidal violence by one means or the other. She was either strangled, asphyxiated, her throat was sliced, or she froze to death. As I said on another outlet yesterday, you tell me, I'm not the most creative lawyer on the planet, but you tell me which of those I can't make a compelling case to a jury at the conclusion of this guy who across decades has targeted, assaulted, raped, terrorized women, and now does the same to Drew Shedin. You tell me that the method that he chooses for killing her is going to be the crux of the case. And there, I'll stop with the opening comments on that. But that's compelling. So, yes, to answer your question, as I always do in a long way, Joel, we were very surprised by the outcome from the judge and everything I just said. Why? Because it shouldn't have been expected from
him. So, as you pointed out, Judge Ralph was involved in this all across the way.
Every step of the way.
Yep. Was there, when you read some of what he wrote, and I'm not trying to pretend I read the whole decision, but clearly he's mad. You've obviously read it because that's your life that he's talking about there. Is he mad at you? Is he mad at the medical examiner? It's quite clear to me he's mad at the medical examiner. He feels information wasn't put forward. You mentioned Bob Hoy and the job that they did. One would say, okay, did they drop the ball in relation to asking for information from the medical examiner? I don't know. I don't live in that world. I know what I would firmly agree with you on Bob Hoy's reputation. That is indisputable. My point is this. Did you know what Judge Erickson is upset at the medical examiner over.
The things that he has in his opinion, again, our part of the appeal went years ago, all the way up to the Supreme Court, where they're attacking the United States, attacking the court, attacking the process, attacking the jury instructions, all of that stuff, attacking our evidence. That's already been decided. We prevailed all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. This, right now, this is what's called 2255. This is basically a compendium of ineffective assistance of counsel arguments. This is all about the defense. This is Alfonso saying, my defense was insufficient. And that's why I bored you with, you know, who these people are, how hard they work and what their reputations are. And then that the judge, this same judge, was overseeing their investigation, signing off or not signing off on certain tests being done and experts. And all throughout it, they had some of the finest experts in America. So it was surprising. But no, to answer your question, here's what he says throughout this opinion. By the way, there's nothing. There's only one thing in here, actually, that where something is the United States is alleged to have done something. They had some allegation that we withhold a piece of discovery. And back on page 176, the government did not fail to disclose. I mean, that's the only thing that even impacts directly us. The rest of it, though, is Rodriguez's trial counsel were deficient. Rodriguez's trial counsel were insufficiently prepared. Rodriguez's trial counsel did not do enough investigation to find out something that maybe happened on PTSD. And you know what's interesting? The defense waived the argument of PTSD. They waived it in a footnote, the same appellate lawyers, because they knew they had nothing left to go on it. Kind of confusing that that becomes a central crux of the decision. That's important. And a lot of people won't read this. I don't blame them. It's 230-some pages. I've read through it. Need to read it some more times. But, yeah, I mean, all throughout here, I've tagged this. Every one of these tags is another place where the judge starts off his argument or his decision by saying things along the lines of how counsel failed to conduct an adequate investigation of the cause of death, and on and on and on and on. That's just not true. And also, the cause of death was not the crux of this case. He made the point that it did become the government's, the rallying cry in the closing arguments. Well, of course, I don't pick a medical examiner. Whoever's on duty that day, who does the autopsy, and then we all get the reports, and so does the defense. But Joel, if I showed you those photographs, if I went through there, you would have a pretty good idea about the cause of death. And if somebody would come in, an expert comes in and says, no, actually, you know what? It wasn't the knife wound to the neck. She was asphyxiated. My guess is you would think of a closing argument for that scenario as well. Homicidal violence at the hands of Rodriguez, multiple convicted string of sex offenses guy. I like our chances for being able to put to a compelling argument to go to a jury to say, for these acts, this multiple aggravated murder, this defendant shall die.
I don't think anybody disputes the fact that Alfonso Rodriguez murdered her, that isn't part of the debate. One of the attorneys that called me last night and I had the chance to talk to said, clearly, Judge Erickson is mad about the information given by the medical examiner or the examination himself. That information wasn't made available to the defense. One thing about, and this person said this directly, so I want to give you a chance to answer it. This individual said, if you're in a courtroom and you're trying to determine guilt, that's one thing. You know you have guilt. If you're trying to determine whether or not this is a death case, really what you're talking about is you're in way better situation of trying to make that argument if the person believed that Drew Shedeen had been raped and then killed versus just killed. So it begs this question, was that information made available to the defense, to the jury itself? Was Drew Shedeen raped? Was that part of this process, which is something that attorney put in question?
They put it pretty well there. And I'm glad you asked this question in particular. Now, I don't remember everything from law school. I don't remember everything. But I do remember that it does not take, and you'll forgive me for morning radio, it does not take the natural... how to say this. The issue goes to whether there was semen found in her body. Now, as the court makes very clear, and he points out, you know, he doesn't name me there, but I was the prosecutor arguing that I did all the closing arguments. He said the prosecutor stayed away from that part of the case and didn't argue very much about that particular fact because, of course, the circumstantial evidence make pretty clear. You've got she's abducted, she's beaten, she's tied, hands tied behind her back. She's stripped from the waist down. Her sweater is pulled up over her head, exposing her breasts and her bra. That's what not the biggest mystery in this case, whether it involved an attempt or carrying out of a sexual assault. Not a very that nobody felt that that was mysterious. Nobody. And the judge makes that clear. And even interestingly, on that component, his basic point is McGee testified about, you know, that there was a deposit that we don't think he could have said that based on some other scientific. And he makes point. But the government didn't even argue it. They're arguing the circumstances of the case. And I don't know that anybody would look at the pictures of the case, know about the background of the defendant and everything else, and wonder. And again, wasn't charged with rape. It wasn't even one of our aggravating factors. It was relevant evidence in the case for which there were four aggravating factors. And under the federal death penalty statute, you need one.
So you talk about Judge Ralph and the relationship and how this has gone forward in the process. Another attorney last night spoke to me and said that you had come out and spoke to their bar association with Judge Ralph Erickson. Mm-hmm. And they had a real problem with that, Drew. I want to make sure that you understand. They said, look, it's as though now they completely disagree on an issue when before they had a real question about the efficacy of a judge and a prosecuting attorney being on a stage together and talking about a case that could have been and in the end was appealed.
Yeah.
And so the relationship between you and Judge Erickson at one time clearly had to have been better to be able to go out and do, whether it's a dog and pony show, whether it's going to bar associations, whatever. And apparently there are attorneys there who raised that question at the time. And I want to give you a chance to address that.
I appreciate you obviously that was an open and transparent thing that we did. And I appreciate you raising it. But I'm going to quarrel with some part of what you're saying. It's like, well, now Judge Erickson and I have a bad relationship. But then it would have been good because we got the death penalty in this case. Chul, I was a U.S. attorney across 10 years. Thousands of cases coming through. I've been a prosecutor for 18 years. I don't have good or bad relationships, friendships, and I behave ethically with that friendship if we're getting along well. And I won't talk to them if we're not getting along. It's not like that. And I just have to tell you, I'm glad you raised that somebody would say that. There's absolutely no ethical problem at all with us appearing on that stage. There were definitely curbs on what we could discuss, and we only discussed, the parts of the trial that had been public. I've spoken to several bar associations on this case over the years. There's interest in it because this is the only federal death penalty case in our state's history, and there's been no death penalty case since about 1914. People are interested in talking about it, and I'm always willing to answer their questions when it comes up. No one could raise an inference like, oh, I bet they schemed together behind the scenes. I mean, the federal courthouse, you're familiar with it over there. Down in the basement, all the judges park down there in a security garage. So does the U.S. attorney. So does the U.S. marshal. So do some of the probation people and park under the. You run into people every day. We're not disallowed from talking to one another, but we are absolutely disallowed from talking to each other ex parte about things that involve a case in the past that might be appealed, as you say, or that comes up in the future. And I know that Ralph and I could both, Judge Erickson and I could both pass a polygraph that we have never done that and never would.
Well, the concern these people had was that it was in public about a case.
They didn't like the appearance of it. And that, right. People have their sensitivities, and I understand that.
But when we come back, it's one simple question. Dollar-wise, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's going to lose a night's sleep overall if Alfonso Rodriguez is put to death tomorrow. I know I wouldn't. But I've always argued whether or not it's a true deterrent in crime or whether or not it's just justice being served. Have we wasted millions of dollars on the death penalty in this case when we could have had him put away forever and the case is in the rearview mirror rather than now we're looking at it mm-hmm. in the front window? So stick around. I'll ask you that question when we come back. Drew Wrigley, former U.S. attorney for the state of North Dakota. He prosecuted the Alfonso Rodriguez trial, the Drew Shedin murder that took place. Drew, I told you before the break I was going to ask you this, which is all these years later, all this money later, all this time later, all this litigation of the case later, was it worth it to ask for the death penalty? Should this have been a death penalty case?
Of course. Yeah.
With the circumstances then that we're hearing now, did we, looking back, would you still have asked for the same thing?
I'm going to ask you to not think I'm being flippant. I'm being sincere about this. When your sister did not prevail in the election for re-election for the United States Senate. How much time did your family say, "God darn, Heidi, I guess you shouldn't have run"? And of course, that's not the case. Now, I don't mean to, and people say, well, you shouldn't equate politics with, it's a United States Senate seat. Now, I've known Heidi a lot of years. I don't think that she, for 1 minute after that, thought, oh man, I guess I shouldn't have gone into this. This case, it requires one aggravating factor under federal law for there to be an aggravated factor that makes it death penalty eligible. There were four. Across decades, Alfonso Rodriguez Jr. targets, abducts at knife point, and rapes women. He did that twice, and he got long sentences. Then he tried another woman in Crooks, and he tried to abduct another. She wouldn't go with him. He stabs her through her arm, out the other side, into her torso. Unlucky for him, she's a portrait artist. She gets away, and she's able to sketch a perfect sketch of him, and he gets arrested, and he serves 23 and a half years in prison. He gets out in May of 2003, and in November, all the rest. Kidnaps, beats, ties, terrorizes, strips, sexually assaults, brutally murders, and dumps the body of Drew Shadeen. He, as I said yesterday, and I've said across the years, he's worse than a guy with a murderous impulse, Joel. Like you say, well, he didn't have murderous impulse. His other victims testified against him and he went to prison. This time he said, I'm old enough, I'm going to be in prison for the rest of my life anyway. I'm going to kill my victim.
But
that he didn't get to pick his penalty and say, well, it's worth it to me to go to jail for the rest of my life. No.
In the little time we have left,
yep.
and you understand this because you've been around media a lot in your life, you bring up Heidi, that has nothing to do with this.
It does a little bit.
Whether or not Heidi ran for office and won or lost isn't it at all. The question I'm trying to ask you, Drew, is pretty simple. Do you, knowing now what you know now and knowing the circumstances that Judge Erickson is writing about, were we right as a nation to go after the death penalty when it comes down to all the money that's been sent, when you know that you had, and he was going to be put away forever? He wasn't going to come back out and do what you just described.
The jury made the right decision at the end of this case. The appellate courts did the right thing on the whole way up when they examined the case itself, the case that we tried, the arguments that I made, how we conducted ourselves throughout the trial, and how the court conducted itself. Every step of the way, they were right. I quarrel with this opinion. I cite the history of the judge handpicking these lawyers and overseeing everything they do, and now all these years later concluding, oh, they didn't do enough. I don't think I quarrel with that. I'll leave it at that.
10 seconds left. Yep. What happens with the case now?
Well, it's up to the Justice Department, the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, and the President of the United States having to decide whether they're going to allow the government to have another sentencing hearing and try to seek
that penalty. So it's really up to this administration.
It is.
What about, you can answer yes or no. Did John Ashcroft make you go for the death penalty?
No.
Okay, that was your decision.
The AG has to decide it. I got my recommendation, and okay. I got no... By the way, remember, there was another case. John Ashcroft was convinced not to, that it went in office.
Thanks for coming on.
Yes.
We'll do some more later.
Thanks, Joel.